Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today I am jazzed to have Michelle Gielen. Michelle is a national CBS News anchor turned positive psychology researcher who is the best-selling author of Broadcasting Happiness, The Science of Igniting and Sustaining Positive Change. She is the founder of the Institute for Applied Positive Research and is partnered with Arianna Huffington to study how transformative stories fuel success. She is an executive producer of The Happiness Advantage, the special on PBS, and a featured professor in Oprah's Happiness Course. Michelle holds a Master of Applied Positive Psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, and her research and advice have received attention from the New York Times, Washington Post, Forbes, CNN, Fox, and HBR. You can follow her on Twitter. It's at Michelle Gielen, and that's spelled Michelle with two L's, and Gielen is G-I-E-L-A-N. So, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us from Dallas today.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's a really interesting subject and topic, and our theme for this year for Wise Talk has been about stress management. And so this certainly falls in terms of how we can look at some of the research you've been doing and how we can look at being more positive and looking at positive change. So we're excited to have you here. To start out, I always ask really the same question of my guests because I have a real interest in how some historical context for how you decided to write the book. Especially your path, because you were in broadcasting and an anchor, and then you turned to this. So tell us a little bit how that happened.
So I was anchoring two national newscasts at CBS, and basically I got tired of telling negative news stories. But more importantly, what I wanted to understand was how can we actually talk about the negative, like terrorist attacks or things happening in our community that are not working as well as we want, in a way that actually leaves us feeling empowered and ready to take action. And what I came to see was that there's actually a stunning body of research that shows us that when we make small changes to the way that we communicate, we actually fuel every single business and educational outcome that we know how to track. So when I was at CBS, the way it kind of all started and the way I started to see, you know, all of this research was that we were at the height of the recession. It was, it was a time when everyone pretty much was feeling helpless to make changes either in their own lives or on behalf of the country and the economic situation. We felt really kind of out of control. And so during the midst of this, we said at CBS, what can we do to change the broadcast in a way that could actually be beneficial to those who are watching? So what for one week of programming, what we ended up doing was we, for every time we served up a problem, we talked about concrete ways that you could tackle that challenge. And all of these problems kind of revolved around the recession, your home's facing foreclosure, or you're fighting as a couple because of financial stresses. We brought in experts from the field of positive psychology, the science of happiness and human potential, to give us actionable strategies. And we got the greatest viewer response of the year. But more importantly, what we saw was that if you change your broadcast, whether it be on the news or as a business leader or as a parent to your family, you literally change other people and the trajectory of their lives. And so I wanted to understand more deeply that science, which is why I went to study at the University of Pennsylvania under Dr. Martin Seligman, positive psychology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize he was there. Okay, great. He's the guru.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. 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 So, he found his field. Yeah.
Right. So you stopped broadcast. You stopped your job, essentially.
Yeah.
Wow.
I couldn't do both because the program was obviously very demanding, and then the schedule at CBS was very demanding, and so I had to make the choice, and I'm glad I made that choice.
Yeah, that's a big decision. That's great. So since you got your master's degree, you've been doing mostly consulting and writing and researching, essentially?
Yes, absolutely. So we've worked now, and when I say we, it's myself, and we have a a small company, a positive psychology consulting firm. We've worked with now about half of the Fortune 100 companies. We work with schools and other organizations. And what we basically do is we communicate the science of positive psychology in a way that hopefully creates positive change in organizations. So we've done either long-term research projects, we worked with individuals on more of a coaching basis, and then we obviously give keynotes at organizations as well.
Right, okay. So talk with us a little bit about, to start here, about your research on optimism and the success scale, and tell us a little bit about that, and then what impact does that have on business leaders, or could it have on business leaders?
Yeah, So what we did was we've been looking at the science of optimism and how it actually fuels success. What we find is that when our brain is in an optimistic state, we can improve every single business and educational outcome that we know how to track, from increasing sales by 37%, increasing your levels of productive energy by 31%, your chances of promotion over the next year by 40%, and decreasing the negative effects of stress like headaches, backaches, and fatigue by 23%. Optimism is not rose-colored glasses. I know there has been some misunderstandings about that because we think it's more of a Pollyannish approach to the world. Instead, what optimism by the definition is it's expecting good things to happen and maintaining a belief that our behavior matters, especially in the face of challenges. So when we think about it in terms of, you know, if you're a sales professional, if you expect good things to happen, like you're going to hit your sales target, and you believe your behavior matters, you're going to pick up the phone and make that fifth and sixth and seventh phone call when 2, 3, and 4 said no. What we've been looking at is how to quantify the strategies that we recommend at organizations and be able to quantify the results that they create. We created something called the Success Scale, which is a 30-question assessment. I invite everyone to take it. It's very insightful, and what it does is it tests you on these three greatest predictors of long-term levels of happiness that we have, or sorry, of success that we have in the research. Happiness and success are so interlinked that sometimes I get ahead of myself. But what those are is work optimism, which we talked about, positive engagement, basically your story about stress. When you're stressed, do you go into fight or flight, or do you look at stress and a stressful event as a challenge, and therefore your brain gets turned on to its highest potential? And the last one is this idea of support provision. How much support are you providing to the people around you? What we find is when people are exceptionally supportive, in particular they're scoring in that top quartile, the top 25% of that particular metric, they are significantly more likely to be highly engaged in their jobs, get promotions, get raises, and make more money over the course of their career. So taken together, those three metrics, they account for, in our research, 75% of long-term job successes. If we understand them, we can predict with pretty high degree of accuracy, you know, how successful you'll be over your career. And yet, when we think about how we hire and train, we don't really focus on those things. But the best part, I think, about all three of these elements of our mindset is that they're malleable. You can do small positive habits. You can use tools from positive psychology to make yourself more optimistic, to focus more on providing support, to change your relationship with stress, and then that can have an incredible ripple effect on your career.
Okay. So let's take this apart a little bit. So let's go back to the three again, because I don't know if I got all those down. I probably other people could use a refresher here. What were the three?
Sure.
The first
one's work optimism.
Work optimism.
The expectation of good things to happen, the belief that your behavior matters.
Okay.
The second one is, we call it positive engagement. It's basically having a relationship with stress. Just as context and background around this one, because I just find this so fascinating. So we did a study with UBS, with stressed out managers, split them into two groups, gave one group a typical stress management training, which is how you basically deal with stress. And then the other group, which is the experimental group, we trained them on how to rethink their relationship with stress. We pulled data from scientific journals that show that in many cases, stress can actually be enhancing to your body.
Mm-hmm.
It can provide higher levels of cognitive functioning, mental agility, memory, energy, et cetera, right? But it's not the story you hear about when you are looking at stress on the news, right? And then we track these two groups over time, and the group that was able to rethink their relationship with stress. And this was, by the way, I like condensed a 3-hour training. It was a full training. They were able to experience, or they reported experiencing 4 months later, a 23% drop in stress-related symptoms. So it wasn't that their stress levels had gone down. It was that they were processing it in a different way and responding to it differently physically.
Right. Yeah, one of the last people we talked, I think it was maybe 3 months ago, talked about that it's not that stress is the issue, it's the rumination that is actually, it's the pressure and the rumination from the pressure that we feel that is the issue, not so much the stress itself, because stress can be positive, as you said.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. And it was interesting when you were talking about optimism, because the example you gave, it reminded me somewhat of resilience. Like your salesperson will continue to, you know, if yes, he gets the no on the third and the fourth one, but he'll go to the fifth and sixth. Is there a relationship between resilience and optimism? Is there anything about that in the research? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. So in general, people who are more optimistic are also more resilient and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So there's absolutely a connection there.
Yeah.
I should say that the third metric to explain a little bit more about that one, the idea of support provision, this was fascinating. We started asking questions to understand how supported an employee was by their organization and their colleagues, because our thinking was, well, in order to be successful, you must have all the resources you need and the training, et cetera, right? But mm-hmm. and while the answers to those questions were somewhat predictive of long-term levels of success, when we started flipping the questions around and asking if, for instance, a colleague is falling behind on their work, how likely are you to step in and help out? If they need a listening ear, how likely are you to invite them out for coffee and talk with them? When we started to understand how supportive an individual is of the people around them, that's when we really had a better understanding of, and were better able to predict their long-term levels of success and you know, how they do over the course of their career.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wow, okay, there's lots to ask about. So I guess, let's see, I think for the group that's listening, very practical group, many people on the call are managers, some are consultants, coaches. This affects everybody, of course. Some are parents. So I guess the best question to ask at this point would be, maybe talk with us a little bit about your research in terms of how it can make a positive difference when working with colleagues, especially with their negative and difficult behaviors. So
yeah.
If you can give us some examples there or some tips, I guess.
Yeah, so this is the number one question I always get is, okay, so it's great to have a positive mindset. How do I deal with a really negative person in the room? What we find is when we're looking at who has the power to influence the people around them and create culture in an office or around the dinner table, what we see in the research is there's a very clear case about who's most powerful. It's actually not the most positive person in the room, but at the same time, it's not the most negative person in the room. It's the person who's most expressive of their mindset. The challenge is that oftentimes the negative person, because it comes along with some anxiety, they are most expressive of that mindset. You can very clearly hear when someone who is being negative doesn't agree with your idea in a meeting, right? Meanwhile, oftentimes we find that people who are already positive, they have an optimistic viewpoint, let's say on a new idea presented in a meeting, they don't necessarily speak up. We did a study with Training Magazine where we found that cross-industry, 31% of people are actually already optimistic. They're just not expressive of that mindset. So what that means is that in order to be able to fully activate those people to help you out, to shift the culture to be more positive, what's best for us is to model that positive behavior of expressivity. When we feel good about an idea, say something. When we see someone doing a job, you know, well done, speak up, praise them. Those small moments when we actually focus on the good and the meaning embedded in the work that we're doing, the things we're grateful for, the successes we have, they actually encourage other people to feel comfortable to speak up as well. And the number one thing that I always recommend is if you're really trying to change the conversation or the dynamic, is to start with what I call the power lead. The power lead, taking from my days in media, normally with a newscast, you know, when you start the top story, it follows the old adage, if it bleeds, it leads. We are broadcasters ourselves, and mm-hmm. so for our own personal broadcast, the hope is, you know, what's your top story? The hope is we just follow the opposite approach. So instead of following that old adage, we follow the power lead, which is starting off a conversation, an email, a meeting, a phone call, anytime you interact with another person, by sharing something positive and meaningful. You know, we've all been in meetings where it starts off negative and it only goes downhill from there, or dinners where someone starts off by complaining and then it becomes a complaining session. The Power Lead is a great opportunity for you as a leader, no matter what your title at any organization, to take the lead on the conversation and then prompt others to hopefully match in kind and take the conversation in a different direction. So very practically, you know, a lot of times when you ask somebody, hey, how are you? Sometimes people will say, oh, I'm so tired, or oh, I'm so busy, oh, it's been so busy lately. And, you know, there's only two options to respond. There's either you meet them with compassion, or, you know, everyone plays misery poker. Oh, you think your commute was bad? Let me tell you about mine. Meanwhile, if we start off by sharing something simple and meaningful, how are you doing? You know, I'm doing great. I had breakfast with my son this morning. He's being so funny. Right? It just takes that conversation in a different direction. If you start off meetings, we've seen a tech lead in California at a company we worked with. He started off with three gratitudes, one thing he was grateful for about life in general, one about the team in general, and one about someone specific on the team. Meeting attendance went up. Team cohesiveness improved. It was a game changer for them. And there's all kinds of creative ways that you can infuse the Power Lead into your day. And you're probably already doing it. The question is, how can you leverage this research even to an even greater level and do it just a little bit more?
Mm-hmm. Well, and even if we find is that people, it's just easy to, at any, I mean, whether you're with your family or with your work coworkers or with your industry or consulting, that it's not even so much it's negative, it's that you start out with just the problem instead of,
yeah.
You know, it's not even like it's just negative per se, but you're just trying to find solutions and deal with issues without sort of talking about what's good in what we're doing or what's positive or what can shine a light on something that can be empowering rather than just jumping into the problem.
Yes, it's so true. I mean, the thing to think about is that in no time do we want to ignore the negative or ignore problems, because then that becomes irrational. We're really striving for rational optimism, taking a realistic assessment of the present moment while maintaining our belief, a belief that our behavior matters and expecting good things to happen. Meanwhile, though, we don't want to just jump right into dealing with a problem, unless, of course, it's something serious. But on, you know, regularly, normally, we want to give our brain a chance to be in a positive state first, because that actually will change how we look at the problem. If all we see are you know, like we did at Happy, prior to Happy Week at CBS, if all we saw was problem, 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 and at no time did we talk about solutions, our brain starts to believe our behavior doesn't matter. Meanwhile, if a manager, for instance, at the top of a meeting starts to say, hey, look, this is all the progress we've been able to make. These are the successes we've had. It changes how people's brains respond then to tackling the problem. One piece of research I think is like, it's so relevant actually, especially lately, because I know a lot of people have been so affected by the news. But I also think it ties into how, you know, leaders can manage their teams and parents can talk to their children, especially in the face of challenges. We did a series of studies with Arianna Huffington, and we found in the first study that exposure to just 3 minutes of negative news in the morning can increase your chances of having a bad day by 27%. And
wow.
It's staggering. And that's as reported 6 to 8 hours later. So that is still sticking with you when you're cooking dinner with your kids. But what we did find, though, in the follow-up studies, if you flip the formula around and you don't just talk about the problem, but you actually introduce a discussion of potential solutions, like a manager has a brainstorming session with his team when something's going down, that you actually improve everyone's creative problem-solving abilities on average by 20%. You make people feel better. So you're supercharging their brain just by getting it to focus on what they can do about the challenge as opposed to just simply the challenge itself.
Mm-hmm. And back to this, the wow, I said that you said that if you look at three pieces of negative news, it's
yeah, it was, what we
27%
did
in, higher. How did you,
yeah,
how did you determine
did,
that? It's interesting.
What we did in the study was we exposed people to either a three-minute video of negative news, so very much like what you just see if you click on the news in the morning, right? And then the other group, the experimental group, received a video that was 3 minutes of what we call I call transformative news, which is solutions-focused, activating, engaging news that where people feel are left feeling as if they could potentially tackle the problem or they feel inspired. And yeah, the swing was just absolutely enormous between the two groups.
That's amazing. That's a it's very simple too. It's a great way to figure that out. So this brings me to I assume you've heard of Teresa Amabilia's work on the progress principle. Is that ringing the bell at all? Yeah, so this is reminiscent of it because, you know, I'm talking about how the positivity of progress affects you not only that day, but that it also affects you into the next day. Very similar kinds of results. Not the studies are completely different, but they did journaling, but in terms of the result, very similar. Let's go to the audience. Let's see who has a question or a comment that they'd like to ask Michelle. Say your name and the question. Who would like to start?
Michelle?
Sure, this is Tawny. Can you hear me?
We got two people. Tawny, go ahead, and then we'll go with the male voice.
Okay, go ahead. And then we'll find out the male's name.
Yes.
All right. This is Tawny Lees. I'm with Mariposa as well. Michelle, I love everything that you're talking about. I'm sitting here taking copious notes. I'm wondering what your experience is as you sort of teach this to people, I guess. I see that you sort of you teach this in courses. How easy is it for people to shift their behavior, right, because that's sort of what we work on with people as coaches, and to actually change the language that they're using and to actually do what you're saying, which is to you know, broadcast the positivity when they're speaking. Like, what are your findings about actually what it's like to get people to make that change?
Yeah, so it's really actually exciting to watch the process because I think this research calls on the best of who we are. And people hear about it, and they say, yes, this is confirming everything that I've had a hunch about my entire life, about how my mind works or how to deal with stress. At the end of just about every single talk I give, including I just spoke at a high school commencement, I encourage everyone to take up a challenge, which is a 21-day challenge where you open up your email before you look at the messages in your inbox, which can oftentimes cause us stress, right? It can be just as powerful as that negative news, depending on what you have waiting for you there. Before you look at them, click compose and send a 2-minute positive email to someone in your social support network. So a friend, a family member, a colleague, go back to your track high school coach if you need to. That's what I did to get to your 21. But the key is to send them a note that just takes 2 minutes to write, praising or thanking them for something they've done since you've known them. The reason why this is powerful, it's not so much to receive the nice notes back, which will happen. It's really about communicating to your brain all these incredible people that have loved and cared about you over the years and supported you during that time. Social support is the greatest predictor of long-term levels of happiness that we have in the research. And so the more that we can focus our brain on that and show our brain that we have these people that care about us, the better everything else works as well. What happens is if you ask about, like, you know, how do people respond, I think the vast majority of people, they feel pulled towards this research. Now, getting them to actually engage in some of these positive habits, as it is with a nutritionist getting someone to eat better or a coach, you know, getting their person to get out the door and go for a run, there's always a challenge there. But the thing that we have done in our research is we've been looking for these very simple, very easy habits that are easy to insert into your day. So my hope is that by making it just 2 minutes and by researching the effectiveness of just a 2-minute note and just 21 days, it increases the likelihood that people will try. And I've had so many people, we did a retreat with Deepak Chopra, and I presented to this group, and this guy came up to me. We had a little break, and then we were going back into session. And he said, okay, so before the break, when you asked us to send a note, I sent a note. And then during the break, I ended up sending 5 more because, like, I'm so excited about it. You know, so they oftentimes take it on. But the more we can do it as a group, like a team does it together, or, I just spoke at Marriott to 800 HR professionals, and they adopted this as kind of a company initiative. The more we can do it as a group, I think the higher levels of accountability there is, and then the more likelihood that everyone will take part.
So that's a great idea. Now, why 21 days?
Fantastic question. So what we see is that 21 days is a good amount of time to reap the benefits of it and also to potentially start a life habit. So your life habit might not be sending positive notes every single morning, but the life habit might be, it becomes a more regular habit where after the 21 days, you're more likely to send a thank you note to somebody after you meet with them for, a potential new client or something like that. The other thing is that there have been research studies that look at the power of gratitude. If you write down 3 new and unique things you're grateful for, at the 21-day mark, people who were 80-year-old grumpy pessimists who had been tested as moderate-level pessimists, they actually started to test as low-level optimists. They kept the practice up then for 6 months. Those then tested as low to moderate-level optimists. So it's been a kind of a researched amount of time. The other thing that's fun is that there have been a couple times that neuroscientists have looked at the impact of a new habit at 28 or 29 days, and they actually can see on the brain scans new neural pathways being formed.
Interesting. Tony, you have a follow?
No, that was great. That's exactly what I was looking for. Thank you.
Great.
This is Jonathan, the unnamed male voice.
Hi, Jonathan.
Thank you so much for this event. I guess, Michelle, I have to ask you the question about the media and what this means for the future of modern media. I'm making the connection to Ev Williams's piece, the Twitter founder, about his campaign to really bring positive, a more balanced. Just wondering what your thoughts are about how we change our relationship to news media and media more generally.
Yeah. So, great question. So right now, what's happening is there are 2 major problems. We are off balance with how many negative events and stories we talk about versus more positive ones. And then we are using the news media to deliver only problems or largely problems, and we're not talking about solutions. So I think that the biggest transformation can be that we use the broadcast channels and the internet, reputable news sites, to deliver information about how you, no matter what challenge you're facing, can overcome this challenge, because other people have most likely walked this or some version of it before. When we share those solutions, we significantly increase the likelihood of people taking action in a positive direction. The real challenge with the news right now is it's making us believe our behavior doesn't matter, like I had mentioned before. What I propose is that we start being significantly more solutions focused. So it's not puppies and kitties and water skiing squirrels, although those are great to boost our mood for a minute. But in the long run, we need a third, more more conscious path, which is, let's talk about what we can do in the face of challenges, and then let's share those inspiring stories of individuals and organizations who have overcome challenges that might be different from what we're facing right now, but they show us that people have been successful. And then, you know, I think the other major thing, which social media is doing to a large degree, but not always in the most positive way, is to connect communities and connect like-minded thinkers so that we can have those important discussions. So at the end of my book, and also I make this available online, I publish something called the Journalist Manifesto, which it looks at how what I call transformative journalism can change the face of media, make it activating, engaging, and solutions-focused. And here's the thing about it. The document is a business case for why this is actually good for news organizations, because we have found that there is a whole body of research that shows that if you place an advertisement next to negative content, it actually decreases likelihood of purchase of that product. Advertisers fuel the bottom lines of news organizations. Meanwhile, if you place an advertisement next to, again, not puppies and kitties necessarily, but inspiring, engaging, positive content, people are significantly more likely to purchase that product, which is great for the advertisers, which is great for the bottom line of organizations, of news organizations. And I, like, you know, my motivation is not necessarily to increase revenues for news organizations, but I'm looking at this as a means to an end. That way, the society gets the kind of coverage we need to live our best lives, and the news organizations have money to you know, investigate that kind of and create that kind of content. So it's kind of, it's a win-win all around. It's just that we're following a broken old formula, and it's taking time to turn the tide. But there are bright lights in the community, and there are amazing journalists, and in every news organization that are doing it, it's just a matter of allowing all those people and others to do even more of it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Jonathan, a follow?
No, thank you. Thanks very much.
Great. If anyone else has a question or a comment.
Hey, Sue, it's Rick Virgin.
Hey, Rick. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I've got a question for you, Michelle. First of all, I find this really fascinating. And so I'm an internal HR leader, consulting leader for a corporation and working with senior leaders mostly. Have you had some examples of success in implementing that power of gratitude or the 21-day challenge with senior leaders? And if so, what were some of the keys to success in getting them to change their own behavior, which often is kind of difficult?
Yeah, so luckily, thank goodness, this research resonates at all levels, and so we've done a lot of work with senior leaders at cross-industry at all kinds of different organizations. Probably the story I'm most excited about now from the work we've done more recently is we worked with Nationwide Brokerage Services when we walked, they're a wholly owned subsidiary from Nationwide Insurance, and when we walked into the building, the president of the company said to us, oh, yeah, this happiness research, probably a bunch of fluff. Mm-hmm. And that's not the kind of welcome you hope for. But anyway, he was a numbers guy, so we presented him with many of the same, you know, pieces of data that I shared with you today. And then we talked about some of the ways in which his senior leaders could prompt positive change from their teams. And in particular, we focused on the sales team to start. So an example of you know, one of the strategies that they tried out was they did something where for the sales professionals, they got them off the phones first thing in the morning, which is, you know, how they make their sales. They got them to meet as a team and do two things. Focus on successes from the past 24 to 48 hours that the entire team might not have heard about, even small things. And then they gave anyone who needed a little extra support that day a chance to speak up, and then your colleagues could rally around you and help you out. So very simple formula. They called it the morning huddle. And now I need to pause every time I say that because I called it at a talk at Google, I called it the morning cuddle, and I have not fully recovered ever since then. I'm sure cuddle in the morning would be great. But anyway, so this morning huddle, as well as a handful of other simple, you know, easy-to-do communication strategies at the company, this president who gave us pushback in the beginning, he now credits with 18 months later increasing the new insurance application rate by 237% and increasing gross revenues by 50%. And that was to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. So, and we see these examples popping up in our work, and then, you know, other professionals in the field of positive psychology and organizational psychology, that when you create a space for this, these kinds of behaviors, when you put the gratitude wall up, when you really use some sort of strong peer-to-peer recognition platform, when, you know, when you do those things and track the changes, you 9 times out of 10 you do see a significant shift, and it relates then to the business outcomes that the business is hoping to fuel.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. And when you talked about that leader that said it's all fluff, I can picture leaders with whom I've worked that would say that exactly.
Thank you. Okay, so I got some more questions. So we've been talking about happiness and engagement. I mean, I love the 21-day challenge, and it's not that hard to do. It's not even 2 minutes. It's 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, you know, it's I mean, we can even text, just being grateful for people or even asking them questions or asking somebody how they're doing. I think that's great. Let's talk about success at work, because some of your research has to do with that. And could you describe some of the predictors of success and that your research is showing, and then give us some examples?
Yeah. I think that, you know, right now, you know, everyone's so focused on looking at the challenges that they're facing and fixing them. And I'm thinking, you know, in large part, team meetings or performance reviews. And what we're starting to see is that as people are really trying to predict and fuel long-term success and growth of the company, they realize that, yes, there absolutely is a place to focus on things we need to improve, but it's significantly more effective to actually focus on all that the company and the individuals there are actually already doing right. There was a manager that we worked with where he decided to, this is again where the 21 days comes from as part of it, is for 21 days he decided to start focusing his team on all that they were already doing right, and then seeing how that would influence their success levels. And what he found was just by simply praising one person new and different each day for a period of 21 days, and the idea was to do it within earshot of a couple of the other team members, he ended up seeing that the entire team's level of productivity in that 3 weeks went up by 31%. And so it wasn't that they were necessarily doing anything different or that he was, you know, and he hadn't changed anything else. It was just praising them to show them all the moments in which their behavior mattered, all the moments in which they were contributing positively to the collective. And then that in turn gave them a little boost, and it equated to 31% higher levels of productivity for the entire team, whether you were the recipient of praise or not.
Why is this so difficult? I mean, is it because, well, people, when they push back on this, I mean, this is a no-brainer. It's just like Amabile's work around progress principle. It's like it's a no-brainer. We know that if we give people praise and acknowledge their progress, it's going to help them. It can't hurt, that's for sure. We know this. And
right.
I think most people do know this, but they don't do it.
We've done studies. When looking at asking people, you know, think back over the last 3 months, how many times were you praised? How many times did you receive praise from your direct manager? You know, how many times did you receive praise from a peer? And the numbers are actually incredibly low. I mean, we all know it, but we don't, you know, we might not make space for it. I mean, I love this one person we worked with at Google, where for all of her direct reports, what she would do is she had thankful Thursdays or something like that. But anyway, she put a calendar reminder because she's like, I know I should be doing this. I know I should be sending nice notes to them. I know I should be thanking them. But I get so busy. We are stressed more than we've ever been before. We have more information bombarding our brains than ever before. Our emails make it, you know, and the fact that we can read them on what should be our home phone or, you know, our smartphone, which should be for our personal life. I mean, there's no end to work. And so I think making a time for it, and even if it's a calendar reminder that says, okay, on Thursdays I'm going to send 5 notes to 5 different people, and I'm going to tell them how much I appreciate them, just that helps make it more of a routine, and then we can reap the benefits of it as opposed to not getting to take advantage of this.
I think that people need to be reminded. But have you? I don't know. Do you work with people ongoingly, or is it more? Are you coaching people at all so you can see how they do this over time, or is it more like an event-driven thing?
Yeah. So the lion's share of the work we do keynotes and trainings, and then empower the in-house team to keep that going. But we have a company that we work in partnership with, and they, my husband, who's also my fellow researcher, Sean Acor, wrote a parable and called The Orange Frog, and they developed a training around it. And so this frog is green originally and then starts noticing orange spots, which he, you know, you as the reader come to understand it's actually representative of his levels of optimism. The more orange he gets, the more optimistic he is. And then he comes to see that it's not only advantageous, it's actually contagious as well. Then a huge storm hits, and, you know, he uses this optimism to lead the team of frogs to overcome this and you know, be successful. Anyway, it's a fun story. And for the trainings that we've done at companies, like we did a full rollout at Nationwide after having that success at one of their subsidiaries, you know, they've gone so far as painting the walls orange at their mm-hmm. offices. They've gone and worn orange shirts and gone to the soup kitchen and volunteered. So what I love about this is that it's provided a sort of a language around all of that. Are you being like Spark today? Or are you being like the, you know, frog from the other pond that's a workaholic or a stressaholic or whatever? So people are kind of all on the same page.
You're establishing the cultural norms. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that's coming up that I'm very excited about is with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, where we have plans this summer to roll out a Happiness Month. And what we're going to do is empower the staff and the donors and supporters, I mean, really anyone within their network, to do some of these positive habits, experiment with them. We're going to collect, you know, the stories that come out of this, but really get the whole community involved in this. Because when it becomes a community affair or a school affair, I mean, it's just the stuff that happens is unreal. We just had a school here in the Dallas area in Frisco do a Happiness Month. And it was awesome to see all. Like, they put a huge gratitude wall up when you enter the high school, and people were filling it up. They kind of like got to the point where it was full within 3 days, and they just didn't know what to do because they wanted to give opportunities for more people to put up their gratitudes, but they didn't want to take the existing ones down. So things spread down the hallway, and you know, it's just so it's exciting to see how sometimes when you just provide baseline information. Power of optimism and gratitude, how then people can run with it and make it their own and transform a culture.
Mm-hmm. Totally, definitely. This is great. You've been really, it's been a wonderful experience today. I know we've got people really fired up and excited, and that's great. I love the questions that people ask as well. So I just wanted to remind people of your book, Broadcasting Happiness, The Science of Igniting and Sustaining Positive Change. You can get a hold of Michelle on Twitter at Michelle with two L's, Gielan, G-I-E-L-A-N. You also have a website?
Yeah, absolutely. And I encourage you to, if you go to broadcastinghappiness.com, although I have to say our website went down earlier today, I think we got it fixed, which is so unlike it. It's usually there. So if you go there, try again tomorrow if you don't find it. But anyway, if you go to broadcastinghappiness.com or michellegielan.com, either one, we have the success scale posted there. I invite everyone to take it. It's a free resource. What it does is it'll test you on those three greatest predictors of long-term success. It'll also give you your scores and an interpretive report. It's a tool that if you are in coaching, please use it with your clients. If you are in HR and you're trying to figure out who to hire, this can be a really informative tool. So that's why we make it freely available. And also more recently, we've, you know, since the theme has been beating stress with your series, we posted on michellegielan.com a stress responder scale, which tests your response to stress. 91% of us could respond better to stress. And so this gives you an insight into your typical response to stress and then some ideas and strategies on how you can train your brain to respond better to hopefully, just move through the challenge less stressed.
Awesome. Okay, great. Thank you again so much for being with us. And I wanted to also let everybody know about next month. On June 22nd at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we have Daniel Friedland. He's the author of Leading Well from Within, a neuroscience and mindfulness-based framework for conscious leadership. So excited to have Daniel with us and discuss his book. And everyone, I wish you a wonderful May, and we're going to start summer here, and school's out, and that's going to cause a lot of stress for parents. So let's have a lot of gratitude around that. All right. Thanks, everybody, again. And thanks again to Michelle. Bye now.
Thank you.